Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. My guest today is Mickey Huff. I'm delighted to have Mickey back. For those who don't know Mickey, he's a California-based professor of history at Diablo Valley College. He's a lecturer in sociology at Sonoma State University, and he's an instructor of critical thinking and media studies at Berkeley City College, of course, in Berkeley. He's also associate director of Project Censored, the media democracy advocacy group that is so, so vital. We need to promote Project Censored so much. It is our salvation against the stuff in the corporate media and the commercial that Republic runs, where it first refers to the garbage on the corporate media, through the corporate media. Indeed so. Well, PC researches and publishes vital news stories that, in its words, are underreported, ignored, misrepresented, or censored by the U.S. corporate media. In my words, and how. In addition, each year it ranks the top 25 stories, publishes them in its yearbook, Censored Media Democracy in Action, and the latest one, there'll be a new one out before too very long, but the latest one out right now is called Censored 2009, the top censored stories of 2007-2008, and that can easily be bought at projectcensored.org/stored. And before we begin, Mickey, I'd like to do something, if you'll indulge me, something important. Welcome to the program, Mickey. Mickey, yesterday I did something I never did before. I recorded a PSA, and yesterday afternoon. I don't know if Republic has aired it yet, but it will be aired on different Republic programs. Usually you don't hear PSAs live, but let me read the PSA I put together and recorded yesterday regarding the dangers of upcoming swine flu vaccinations. So let me just read you what I put together as an alert. I've written a couple of articles on this. I put out a short article alert on Tuesday. Here's my PSA. This is an emergency public service announcement. On June 11th, the World Health Organization declared its highest level swine flu pandemic alert, even though then and now, no forensically proved swine flu death occurred anywhere in the world. Then on July 13th, the WHO recommended vaccinations for everyone, stopping just short of declaring a global emergency and mandating them. That's coming next as we approach the fall flu season. Swine flu vaccines are experimental, untested, toxic, and extremely dangerous to the human immune system. They contain substances that cause a host of annoying to life-threatening autoimmune diseases and must be avoided even if mandated. Watch out for what's coming as corporate media fear-mongering kicks into high gear to convince people voluntarily to submit to these dangerous vaccines. It's essential to avoid them, and at least theoretically or nominally, international and constitutional law protects us. Oh, I used up the whole introductory segment. Mickey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Stephen.
Oh, I wanted to get that in, and this may be, I'll probably do this again, because it's important, and there's no question the fear-mongering campaign will begin in the weeks ahead.
Indeed.
We'll be right back, Mickey, and we'll get into the discussion. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Mickey Huff. Mickey, two quick things, then, and I want to let you jump in and take over. But number one, the action alert on vaccinations that I put out on Tuesday, It brought me an avalanche of emails, far more than I've ever gotten from anything I've ever written. And it was just a very short article alert to just highlight very quickly what's going on and what the dangers are. Everybody with the same thought on their minds. I want no part of this stuff. Now, what do I do to protect myself? But that just takes me right into the article that you and Peter Phillips wrote, posted on Global Research on July 12th, and you call it The Importance of Including Truth Emergency Inside the International Progressive Media Reform Movement. Well, we sure have a truth emergency on what I've just been talking about. Let me let you take over, Mickey, and talk about what you and Peter wrote about in this article.
Well, thanks again for having me on, Stephen. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's terrific having you on, Mickey.
And, you know, you again, are hitting on a topic about which there is just sort of this incredible sense of perceived agreement in corporate media and institutional circles around something that should be a highly debatable public discussion. We should be talking about the pros, the cons, the merits, the who's, the hows, the why-fors. We should be talking about Baxter Healthcare and the profiteering. We should be talking about the infringement on civil liberties for mandating certain things against people's will. I mean, there's a whole host of things that go along with this kind of a so-called program of mandatory vaccination. And it's just one element, again, where you just see conformity, the public cowed by fear-mongering. Even though some people may not make the parallels, it's not much different than the virus of jingoism that was spread rampantly through corporate media and government on the run-up to the Iraq War in 2003, where critical voices of reason and dissent were literally shut out of the corporate media. On the weeks running up to the war, some of the folks may remember that out of all the primetime network and cable news programs in the several weeks prior to the war starting in March of 2003, out of over 300 guests, only 6 gave views critical of the pending invasion of Iraq. 3 of the 6 wanted to wait for more UN intervention. That means only 3 were actually against the war. And this comes from networks with mantras like fair and balanced. You know, this came on the heels of a time when one of the pioneers of television talk shows, Phil Donahue, over at MSNBC, was having his show threatened that if he didn't have 2 or 3 pro-war guests for every anti-war guest, they were going to pull the plug on him. He was the highest-ranked show at the time. They ended up yanking the plug over at MSNBC on Phil Donahue because he was one of the few voices of reason. And again, this ties into the theme, of course, of what we've been doing at Project Censored for a long time. And this idea of the truth emergency is something that we've been dealing with here now in the United States for, well, arguably as long of a time or longer. However, the term truth emergency that we really began circulating in the last couple of years through the Truth Emergency Conference we first held in Santa Cruz in 2008. You can see information on that at truthemergency.us. Peter Phillips and I are continuing this with this article that we're hoping, actually, to be putting together a book, perhaps for next year, on this very subject. It's that we now literally live in a truth emergency world where there's such a yawning gap between the information that's widely available and delivered to people through the traditional avenues of media, corporate media, and the facts on the ground of what's actually happening. Whether you're talking about 9/11, whether you're talking about elections and election fraud, and I don't mean in Iran. I mean here. And again, the truth emergency is a global problem, but it's very, very it's a very dire situation in the United States because we operate under the assumptions that we have a free press and that we live in a democratic society. So people assume that they're being told certain things, well, this must be how it is or this is the story. And even if people are skeptical, they say, well, what do we do about it? Well, the first thing we have to do about it is realize that we have to be our own media. We have to find our own sources of information, like you. You know, we have to gravitate toward people that have transparent factual reporting. We have to gravitate toward people that aren't, what they're telling you isn't contingent on profits. We have to have transparency in information dissemination. These are all things that are antidotes to the truth emergency. And in the article on global research, you know, you'll see we go down the list mostly talking about how truth emergency issues are not just created, but how people who pursue controversial topics are attacked and marginalized as a result. And one of the cases in point, of course, was Glenn Beck on Fox News recently. I say news in quotations, so you should see those quotes around the word news every time I say the word Fox. Glenn Beck basically claimed that proponents of, you know, James von Brunn, people that saw him as a hero for the Holocaust Museum shooting, these were people that were part of the 9/11 so-called truth movement. These were people that were fanatics, and 9/11 truth people were conspiracy theorists that posed a danger to the country.
I guess the danger is that the truth would come out and all the lies would melt away.
I guess the danger is Glenn would be out of a job because
he'd be out of a job indeed.
But I mean, this is amazing. You know, this is it's a little step away from right-wing radio guy. What's his name? Regan, the guy that called for the death of for Iraqi veteran Mark Dice because he was talking about sending. He was actually sending 9/11 truth materials to his former buddies and troops in Iraq saying, hey, we're over here for a lie. This is not about – I mean, you know, Zogby did a poll in 06, and it showed 80% of the troops in Iraq still believed that they were there because Hussein was behind 9/11. I mean, talk about fraud. Talk about, you know, catastrophic, tragic levels of fraud and deception. You know, of the people that are, you know, they had to put their lives on the line for all of this. So I suppose they have to believe something.
Well, they get it in training, Mickey. These are young kids for the most part.
I know.
And they go through the training they get, basic training or whatever they call it, but it includes an awful lot of indoctrination for kids going to war.
This type of brainwashing is criminal.
It really is criminal, including demeaning the enemy as some kind of inferior people, vermin. We need to get rid of them to be safe here at home. I mean, it really is outrageous.
Well, it's not, you know, again, we go back and we look at history as a guide. You know, in World War One, you know, that's where the great U.S. governmental propaganda machine got cranked up with Eddie Bernays and Walter Lippmann and George Creel and the Committee on Public Information, where they had these people called Four Minute Men. Notice that play on American history, the Minuteman, right? So they were four-minute men, and they went around the country to schools and churches and all over the place telling about how, oh, the Germans are – the Huns are coming after us. They even said 300,000 German troops could invade Red Bank, New Jersey in 3 weeks. I mean, this is at the time when World War One was totally bogged down, the Great War was called at the time. There was no chance any of this stuff was going to happen. But the U.S. public, basically knowing this, was against entering the war until they were fear-mongered, until they were propagandized and scared into supporting it. And over a six-month period after Wilson had run as a peace candidate, all of a sudden the U.S. is running headlong into war, this time not brought to war by the generals, but by the intellectuals and the media and government officials. So, I mean, this kind of a pattern of deception. Well, of course, naturally, your listeners are probably all aware of this because, you know, the themes and the terms that were used by Bernays and Lippmann were called engineering opinion or manufacturing consent. And then, of course, the linguist Noam Chomsky and political economist Edward Herman wrote a book called Manufacturing Consent in 1988, describing what they called the propaganda model, how media worked to manipulate public opinion. So this theme goes through the whole 20th century in the United States, and it has really catapulted us into a literal truth emergency where people have this inability to distinguish between what is real, what is not, based on factual evidence. I mean, we are really raising generations of people to not understand what facts are. You know, I mean, a lot of folks, you know, use the term post-9/11 mindset or pre-9/11 mindset, right? We've heard that over and over and over again. Well, if we're going to use 9/11 as any kind of a kind of a watershed. I like to call it the post-fact moment. You know, it's post-fact world. You know, after 9/11, it's sort of like we resort and revert to this infantilized, fear-based, religious and mythological culture of belief, where major leaders of our society appear to be impervious to facts. You know, people like Sean Hannity, people like Glenn Beck. You can talk fascism till doomsday. And, you know, of course, they're telling us doomsday is right around the corner from a different vantage point, not realizing they're in the driver's seat. But, again, this is the kind of truth emergency problem that we have created, is that people are really thirsting for truthful knowledge, information. And, you know, again, divisive issue, controversial issue. But on something like 9/11, when you have the former Brigham Young physics professor, Stephen Jones, you've got over 700 scientific professionals in engineering and architecture with Richard Gage, you know, talking about WTC-7 falling at free fall speed. NIST now even says it fell almost at free fall speed. They finally admitted this years later. Jones's new study in the Open Chemical Physics Journal talks about nanothermite particles that he found in a peer-reviewed journal. This should be something that we're talking about. This should be something that gets fair hearing in our society, and it doesn't. These people are called kooks and lunatics, and it's
just... We have to break in. Of course, that material indicates a controlled demolition.
Sadly.
We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Mickey Huff from Project Sense, talking about truth emergencies. Mickey, while we were on break, I got an email from somebody who's written a play about Gaza called The Prison Called Gaza. He asked me if I would review it. Didn't have much time during the break, so I said sure, but I've never reviewed a play before. And I have to read it and see. He said it's not for the faint-hearted. If he wrote a good play, I'm sure it is not for the faint-hearted.
I'm sure not.
I've written so much about what's going on there and what's going on there now, but that's a topic that is featured regularly on this program. So if he wrote a good play, then I'd be delighted to have him come on the program and we'll talk about it. So he'll probably answer me while you and I are on, but continue with what you're covering, Mickey. You shot me a quick email about historical content. I think that's so important, because to understand what's going on now, you need to know about the past. It just keeps repeating. You know the old Mark Twain line about history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Yeah,
so
it's context, and I mean it is a roadmap. You have to sort of see where we've been in order to understand where we are and then to make intelligent decisions about where we're going. I'm sorry I cut you off there, Stephen.
No, continue, Mickey.
And, you know, teaching history and critical thinking, I mean, this is just something that I just try to get across to people repeatedly. I'm not interested in people agreeing with my opinions or my views. What we are trying to get across, you know, in an educational medium and certainly with Project Censored, is we're trying to really call attention to how information is shaped and distorted, why it's important for people to critically think on their own, why it's important for people to recognize tactics of information disseminators. Like we mentioned in the truth emergency argument again, I try to bring up even just basic informal logical fallacies and elements that anybody can detect, you know, the straw person argument, you know, where somebody just takes a view that you have and they distort it and they attack the changed or distorted view rather than the actual facts or ideas that you're presenting. Or the ad hominem, where somebody just goes and attacks personally. You know, the Glenn Beck example of attacking, well, these people that supported von Braun were 9/11 truthers and they're a threat to the country. So automatically these people are cast in dubious light, and they don't get a fair shake. You know, so many of our debate and discourse is framed, you know, the healthcare issue. about how everybody's supposedly getting a seat at the table, except, you know, Baucus's 45 or 46 people invited to the hearings, none of them supported the public option, even though a majority of Americans support it and a majority of healthcare providers actually support it. You know, that's the truth emergency in action. It makes both a tragedy and farce of our democratic republic because we just don't have one. We have the idea, and sadly to say, the idea has become so grossly distorted that it's no wonder it's difficult to have in practice. So historically, if we go back and look and see that this isn't the first time that we've been manipulated, duped, lied, dragged into a war for profit, for global political global strategy, for resource control. And don't forget, of course you won't forget, but people should remember that one of the key resources attached to warfare is human subjugation, labor, more fodder, more grist for the mill. This is something that, you know, just seems to go, you know, ignored. I mean, the refugee crisis, for example, in Iraq. I mean, never mind the million dead for a minute. How about the 4 or 5 million people still alive that are basically living in hell? Because they have no country to return to, they have nothing, they have nowhere to go. Dar Jamal has written about this extensively, and he's written the introduction for us for Censored 2010 that'll be out late September. And you can get more information about that again at projectcensored.org. But, you know, that's the theme of this year's, I guess that's the theme of Project Censored, of course, for years, but this year's book in particular really begins to hammer home the truth emergency and really starts to look at the theme of no news, of how we live in this 24/7 news culture, but it's no news. I mean, if you want to find out what's going on with Michael Jackson's inheritance and his kids and vitiligo, then you're in luck because you can find up-to-the-date information right down to photographs of that person being dead and whisked away in an ambulance. Good luck if you want to find out any information about nanothermite in Building 7, problems with swine flu vaccination. You know, when you were talking about that, I was just quickly looking online, and you know, one of the so-called great open source information places, Wikipedia. You know, even the Wikipedia page has no mention of the possible controversies surrounding swine flu vaccines. And I mean, I mention Wikipedia not because it's an academic source, but because, you know, as an educator, a lot of students go to Wikipedia. I mean, let's not pretend people don't go there and use it for things.
Oh, I go there, Mickey. I go there.
I go there myself.
Oh,
yeah. I certainly go there. But I also go there and look at the sources at the bottom. I don't look at what's in the Wikipedia article. I look at the references. You know, I critically think about what's being said. But a lot of people don't. A lot of students just go there and they say, oh, there it is. It must be true.
They take it as gospel. You have to be very, very careful with them. I use them for basic stuff.
Right.
You know, names, dates, places, full name of an organization.
We're talking about critical thinking, and we're talking about people lacking critical thinking skills, and that's
oh, absolutely. Mickey, we need to take another break. Let's do that, and we'll come back and keep the ball rolling. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Mickey Huff from Project Censored. Mickey, it bothers me no end that no matter how many times people are fooled, and then when it's too late to matter, they realize they were had. All over again, they get fooled repeatedly on big, big stuff. They should have learned their lessons. They should know better. And it reminds me of the quote I know you know, the old Neil Postman quote, media critic, about people in the U.S. being the most over-entertained, under-informed people in the world. How true.
We just kicked off our junk food news chapter this year again with, it's called Infotainment Society, Junk Food News and News Abuse for 2008 and 9, chapter 3 in the 2010 book this year, that teaching assistant Francis Capel and I wrote this year. I think you met Francis when you were out here.
The names go through me. Maybe if we bumped into each other, I'd say,
yeah,
well, look familiar to me.
A wonderful intern at Project Censored, and has done a lot of great work for us. And she helped put that chapter together this year. And again, that chapter looks at exactly what Postman says. You know, we're the best entertained, least informed society in the world. He wrote that back in the 1980s, you know, in Amusing Ourselves to Death. And it seems it's obviously far more the case here later on today. I mean, same with the prescient warnings of Ben Bagdikian, media monopoly. I mean, you know, these things have all come to pass. Marshall McLuhan, if you want to go back even further, look at C. Wright Mills in the 50s writing about the power elite. Look at Jürgen Habermas writing about the public sphere and the threat to, you know, democratic discourse. Karl Popper. I mean, you know, we can go back through the 20th century. We can look at a lot of these folks talking about these problems.
Mickey, I remember a great quote, if I can get it right, sure. Going back maybe to the 1960s. Do you remember the comedian Ernie Kovacs?
Yeah.
Well, he had a line. I don't know if he wrote it or one of his writers wrote it. He had a line about the media and referring to the singular medium. And his line was something like, well, the reason it's called medium is because it's neither rare or well done.
That's well put.
Oh, terrific line.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, again, what we're treated to. And that chapter in the Censored book on infotainment goes all through that. And again, I mean, it isn't new. And I mean, the Mark Twain quote you brought up, you know, about how history might not repeat itself, but it surely rhymes, you know. Folk singer Ani DiFranco, you know, has one of my favorite lines from a song she did called Little Plastic Castles that we used at the outset of the Deconstructing Deceit chapter in the Censored 09 book on 9/11 and media myth information that I did with Dr. Paul Ray. This really sums up a lot of our problems, I think, and it's very clever. She says, they say goldfish have no memory. I guess their lives are much like mine. And a little plastic castle is a surprise every time. It's hard to say if they're happy, but they don't seem much to mind. You know, the idea based on the notion that goldfish apparently don't have much of a memory. So when they're swimming around in their little bowl, the plastic castle you put in there for their alleged entertainment is a surprise every time they see it. It's kind of like us. It's like, oh, we're being lied to about war again. Well, that's never happened before. It must be right. Or it's seen as an anomaly, right? We go back and say, well, everybody got it wrong. Or the CIA didn't lie or mislead people. They made mistakes. Now, of course, we find out not only did they lie, they withheld information. We weren't torturing. Then, no, we were torturing. Well, it's not called torture. What we were doing wasn't torture. It was an enhanced interrogation technique. Just like we don't kill people that are, you know, non-combatants, it's called collateral damage. I mean, we have a way in our culture of always cleaning up after ourselves in a way that's incredibly superficial, so we never have to accept responsibility or accountability for what we know, what we don't know, and how we behave. Yeah, it's endemic. You know, that's a real disease of a dying culture. And
we really are, Mickey. And again, we have every opportunity in the world to know so much. The state of technology, the hundreds of I have hundreds of cable channels because I live in a building that supplies them all, and I never check them all out to see what's there. But I know full well there isn't one bloody one that's worth spending any time with.
Six major owners, and when you take a look at the people that sit on the boards of directorships for these places, you're going to see people that sit on cross boards of directorships for the military industrial complex. You know, another one of the chapters that Peter and I wrote for the book this year, Inside the Military Media Industrial Complex. And, you know, we take a look at this. I mean, Norm Solomon has written about this in the past. Mark Pilasuk and others have written about this in the past. Peter certainly has written about it in his Global Dominance Group and Information Control Studies. But what we're looking at here is, you know, and this isn't just stuff under George W. Bush. You know, again, Project Censored and other researchers, specifically we at Project Censored, get this rap. People are saying, well, you just don't like right-wingers, or you don't like Republicans, or you guys were just having an axe to grind against Bush. So Peter and I threw together a chapter of what we were doing in the Clinton years and the Bush years, and, you know, we showed the same thing. We're just like, look, we're holding people in power accountable. This is what the free press, the Fourth Estate, is supposed to do, but because they don't do it or don't do it well enough and often enough, we have to have these kinds of watchdog groups like Project Censored, like PR Watch and the Center for Media Democracy, like Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. You know, I mean, if it weren't for these kind of groups, I mean, you know, not only would we not see some of these major problems, these that are so invisible to so many people, but we wouldn't know what to do about it. First thing to do about it, of course, is to realize it. Second thing to do about it is to be the media. As Dave Matheson writes in his new book of the same name, is, you know, we need to be responsible for our own information. I hear all these commercials on Republic Broadcasting between our chatting, you know, and they're all about, you know, financial security and, you know, buy gold and all this talk about be responsible for your own health care. No matter what the topic is, the message is the same. It's be responsible for your own information. Be accountable as a citizen. Inform yourself, arm yourself with information, and the power that that gives will make you not only a well-intentioned actor in the society, but you'll be a well-meaning. You'll also have support for the things that you say and you do that will then be able to convince others of their potential efficacy. This is something that really is, again, at the core of our truth emergency problem. And you were mentioning about your building and the 500 cable channels you've got. Four of the top 10 media corporations have defense contractors sitting on their boards. You know, William Kennard of the Carlyle Group, you know, Bush Sr., he's also at the New York Times. Douglas Warner III is at General Electric, which runs NBC, also at Bechtel. John Bryson, Disney, ABC, also at Boeing. Alan Lewis, also at Disney and Halliburton. And this goes on and on and on. I mean, and if that's too high of a level for people to see, how about just turn on the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer on PBS and see how his programs are underwritten, that's the code word for advertised by, financially supported by, Boeing or Lockheed Martin or GMO giant Monsanto. I mean, and then you wonder, like, well I mean, it's great because the ombudsman of those places always say, well, that has nothing to do with what we report. And then you go and you take a look at the views that they have on there, and the views clearly support the underwriters. I mean, this is, again, this is on and on and on, and you can go back through the whole 20th century and see this problem. It's grown into, an actual epidemic or pandemic, unlike the swine flu. You know, we've got a truth emergency. That's the problem. And the antidote is not a mandatory vaccine. It's critical independent thinking, a willingness to do it, and to have people really get up. And, we just had, I'm sure few people celebrated Bastille Day in America, which is a shame, but we just had the 4th of July celebration. I mean, instead of this being some kind of opportunity for people to blow things up, get drunk on corporate fizzy rice water beer or whatever, buy new mattresses at the mall, et cetera, I mean, they should be going back and reading Thomas Paine. You know, they should be going back and reading Mary Wollstonecraft and the women's rights movements. They should be going back and celebrating, you know, some of the radical ideas that the revolution, clearly not all, of course, as we know that the revolution was not exactly as radical an endeavor as some might have us believe. But, you know, these are the things that are at the core of our culture and society, and we choose. You know, how we mistalked about Neil Postman and our junk food culture. We're also kind of choosing that. We can't, as a society, just say that, well, the corporate media is just spoon-feeding us full of it, and we don't know how to get around it. There are ways around it. Media Freedom International, Project Censored, the Media Freedom Foundation, we have RSS feeds running on our site every day from, you know, umpteen sources, both independent news and independent analysis, global research, independent analysis. Even Amy Goodman at Democracy Now!, you know, sometimes maybe we don't always agree with some of the things that Amy Goodman does, but Amy Goodman covers a lot of critical issues. I mean, sometimes when I'm watching or listening to her, I'm saying, like, wow, this sounds almost like a real news program. It's amazing to see what we are, our news programs have devolved into, you know, these infotainment sideshow circuses. And this is what people really just sort of expect. I mean, the bar has been lowered, I mean, to such a degree that it's no wonder that we have some of the problems that we do. And again, this contributes all to this idea of the truth emergency.
It's really shocking. And of course, in one respect, things are better now because we have the internet and we have the proliferation of information through the internet. It takes a little bit of effort to get at it, but then you have live programs like this. I guess you've got video with things like YouTube. For a program like this, no video, but if we have live pictures of some of the topics we talk about, that would certainly make a greater point. Well, we don't, but we can provide information, real stuff, real hard facts. And opposing us, Mickey, as we both know, is compared to the corporate media was always abysmal, but now it's so consolidated that their power is just like a monster that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and they dominate those 500 channels plus all these interlocking directorates, so they control all these other companies.
The days of George Seldes, you know, journalism's job is not impartial, balanced reporting. Journalism's job is to tell the people what's really going on. You know, those days, if they ever were around, are surely gone. The truth, perhaps the truth has a bias. It's supported by facts. The truth leads us to places. The truth as a transparent process of fact gathering and honest and open discourse and debate. This is different than hitting people with the truth stick, where anything I believe is right and anything someone else believes is wrong. But it's this invitation into this process, into this open society, into the public sphere. I mentioned Habermas earlier, mentioned Popper earlier. I mean, these people were talking about these things in the early 1950s, 1960s. You know, Marshall McLuhan, media scholar, came along and was saying, look, the media is the message. The medium itself is taking over. We're losing any way for this technology to help create this open society. And I think when people just get, you know, even a smattering of that historical context, they can really start to see how things are going on around them. And then they have a fighting chance to do something about it. And that, of course, goes back to personal responsibility and the choices people make. You know, we can choose to have a steady diet of Twinkies for the brain, what Carl Jensen, the founder of Project Censored, called junk food news. You know, or we can go out and support local, organic, healthy options and alternatives. These are personal choices, and it requires education, but it also requires solidarity, and it requires having an openness for people to feel like they can explore, discuss, reasonably disagree, etc. And of course, as you well know, in our culture, we've completely lost the art of disagreement. We do not know how to conduct ourselves in disagreement. We all routinely sort of pal up with all these folks that agree with us. We don't usually expose ourselves to different ideas or different viewpoints. It's like a tribalism, you know, and you can't live in a modern, diverse, democratic state if you're going to have these types of reversions. And again, these things are possible again and predicated largely because of this truth emergency. How do we fight it? Again, information, access to information, seeking the truth, validated, independent news. This is the hope for real information change. You know, this isn't the corporate news stories on Haiti or the replication of it in Honduras right now. That's certainly a sidebar we could go off on. But this is the actual process of vetting information, and that's what we're doing with Media Freedom International and Project Censored. We have over 30 colleges and universities now, professors implementing research in their classes where students are digging through stories, fact-checking LexisNexis database, writing synopses, submitting them, and we're putting them up on the website, projectcensored.org, and Media Freedom, the personal news network we have, year-round. So it's not just going to be the Project Censored book every year. It's all year we have to do this. And you know,
it's so important, Mickey. News is breaking every day. The hour that we're on the air today, you can bet you that there's something important breaking somewhere in the world. But try getting a report on it on CNN or someplace.
Well, that's really a major part of the problem. You know, like if you go to, let's say CNN, right, since they're the pioneers, right? So if you go to their website right now, here's what we get. We get Jack King talking about a stop for donuts and on to the moon. Okay, that's on CNN's front page right now. That's mixed with Sotomayor. Then I'm just looking right now. You got a report about aging athletes. That, Lord knows that's important for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors who can't say no. Family Guy among Emmy surprises. This is on the CNN website. This is on the front page. Video shows Michael Jackson's hair catching on fire. Okay? That's what's at CNN right now. That's what CNN is showing as their most important news stories right now. Contrast that with what Amy Goodman did this morning. I'm just bringing it up, you know. She's talking about Guantanamo prisoners staging a two-week sit-in. She's talking about Israel testing missiles in U.S. waters. I mean, is it the case then that CNN doesn't have the time, space, or effort to talk about? I mean, what's the problem over there? What is the problem with these agencies? Well, the problem is simple. They're agents of the corporate state, and they are corporate propagandists that are paid handsomely for lying repeatedly to the public and providing tantalizing, titillating distractions to prevent people from being able to take responsibility for democratic action. And I think that's, again, at the core of what's wrong with American democracy.
Absolutely, and it's not just CNN. There are two CNNs, as you know, Mickey. There's a domestic and international.
Right.
They're both pretty bad, but international is far superior for real news, for the garbage that they feed us here. But the BBC also, maybe not enough people realize that the BBC is also a propaganda service. Well,
of course.
It has to be. It's owned and managed by the British government.
Naturally.
And if anyone dares put on a wrong report, and it happened a few years back, a man named Andrew Gilligan, he was fired, and the top management of BBC was fired. Because they did touch a hot-button subject the government didn't like, so they just canned these people. Oh, we have to take another break. And again, we'll be right back, Mickey, for a final segment. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Final segment with Mickey Huff from Project Censored. Mickey, so much of concern and so little time to address it all, but we do try to cram it as much as possible, and then I'll get you back, and we'll do it again, whatever is hot at the time.
As always.
But what else is new with Project Censored in the last few minutes, Mickey?
Well, you know, Dr. Ben Frymer is now going to be the director at Project Censored. Peter stepped down after, this is his 13th book, and I had the pleasure of co-editing. I was interim director there for this past year and an associate director, and I'm working with Peter at the Media Freedom Foundation. What we're doing is we're expanding. You know, Ben is going to be running the book at Sonoma State, and Peter and I are going to be working with Media Freedom Foundation with all these international affiliates to do bottom-up grassroots kind of journalism by the people, for the people, using this validated independent news process through colleges and universities where, you know, again, there is an open, transparent, and intellectual nature to the pursuit of finding out what's really going on in the world and posting it up on our website.
I want to introduce Ben to listeners of this program. I know he was out of the country. Is he back yet?
No, he's actually still teaching a course in South Africa, but Ben will be back, and I know he'll want to come on and be on the program at some point.
Maybe later in August we can get them on.
Yeah, so we're doing a lot, and I think we're really just expanding and growing what Project Censored has been doing for all these years. And again, I invite people to go to the projectcensored.org website, go down the page. You can look at, of course, all the point high stories, but look at the investigative research we do. Look at the articles also that we write and produce. I mean, that's actually what makes up a large part of the book every year. Certainly the chapter on the top 25 censored stories is one thing we're known for. But we're also known for the junk food news chapter. We're also known for working with Yes Magazine and Sarah Van Gelder, talking about, well, wait a minute, what's going on in the world that's good? You know, what's right with the news? What's good with the world? What are people doing to make a positive change and a difference? Because it's easy, of course, to get stuck on the, you know, oh my gosh, you know, things are not going well and so forth. But we try to really have a balance in that regard. And again, one of the themes that we're really hitting on is how corporate news has been increasingly made irrelevant by its own profit-based decisions. It is not something that should be trusted. It is not something that we should watch and say, oh, I know what's going on in the world right now. You know, and I think a majority of people even know this. When we take a look at the recent torture questions and how Cheney was hiding this and hiding the wiretapping and you know, doing all these types of things. I mean, you know, Leahy in the Senate was talking about doing a truth commission. Over 60% of the public supported it. Where is it? You know, now we're seeing pressure from Feingold on Eric Holder at the Attorney General's office. Hey, we need an investigation. I mean, this person, this shouldn't be, this is a no-brainer. There should be no prompting. I mean, if we lived in a real democratic society where people held the, were held accountable by the rule of law, these, many of these folks would be in prison, Republicans and Democrats. And we just don't see that. You know, again, if you want to find out what's going on with the King of Pop, you're in luck. There's 500 channels of it. If you want to find out about these shady, secretive, illegal programs of wiretapping and torture, good luck. You got to rely on, you know, actual real journalists, people like Glenn Greenwald, you know, you got to, who just called out Chuck Todd the other day. I don't know if you saw this one. Interesting note to end on. MSNBC. Here's a guy, Chuck Todd, NBC. He's a reporter covering the White House. Yet he's sitting there giving his opinion about how this business on investigating Cheney and holding Cheney accountable for the CIA issues isn't important.
Mickey, I got to cut you off. I got to cut you off. The band in the band in the background says the next guy is ready for his program. Oh, this was great, Mickey. We will do it again very, very soon. And it's always a joy to be on with you. I love it. I wish we could go another hour.
I appreciate it.
I don't think the next host would go along with that. But if he gets sick one day and doesn't show up, maybe they'll let me do an extra hour.
Always keep me in mind.
Oh, Mickey, again, thanks. Please come back tomorrow and join us. We will have my first live Southeast Asian guest. Join us then.